I'm learning. You know, life is always full of learning. And we're going through the book of Numbers this quarter. So I had nothing to do but think. That's what I usually do when I take a bubble bath every Sabbath morning. And so I got wondering, the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and what's that fifth book? Very good. Just seeing if y'all were sharp this morning. Four books. And I begin to wonder, just how much do these four books that cover about 40 years comprise of the Bible? So, I decided to find out. And first of all, it comprises, these 40 years, 11% of all the chapters in the Bible are dedicated to these 40 years. And in the Old Testament, 15% of the Old Testament is dedicated to these 40 years. So we would assume, has the offering been around? We would assume then that if it's taking up 15 and 11% of a book, it must be important. So let's do a little reviewing. Then I'm going to give you a choice of what you would like to discuss here at Sabbath School. Now that could mean that I'm an expert on both topics, or I don't know anything about either one of them. So you can just kind of figure that out. So, let's review. God has called His people out of Egypt. Does it very miraculously. Now, I want you to put yourself in the position of the children of Israel as we go through this little exercise. So, if you saw nine of the Egyptian gods, starting from a lower god, ascending up to the big god, and then the most precious thing in the Egyptian life, which was that firstborn son. If you had seen God show how powerless these Egyptian gods were, and you were a child of Israel, would that get your attention? The answer is yes or no or I don't know. Which one? Would it get your attention?
Yes.
Absolutely. So when you leave Egypt and you come up to the Red Sea and it parts for you, and you go through, and when the Egyptians go through, the water comes back, would that get your attention?
Definitely.
Absolutely. Now you're in the wilderness. And you just have a few days food and water. And when you run out of water and food, there's a water comes from a rock, from a spring, and manna every day except one day comes and feeds you three times a day. Would that get your attention? Absolutely. And if you were cold at night, which on the desert you get cold, there's a nice pillar of fire that's leading you that warms you. Would that get your attention? And if you're hot during the daytime, and there's a nice cloud leading you that gives you coolness, would that get your attention?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. So now we have 15% of the Old Testament, 11% of the entire Bible on these 40 years, and a fair question is, why? Well, as I begin to study and look and over these things, there's two ways of looking at life. One way is that God is demanding things of His children. Let me illustrate. If you're not aware of it, I'll tell you, and if you're not aware of it next week, I'm going to remind you that we are now taking care of our 5-year-old great-grandson on a kind of a full-time basis. Have I mentioned that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. I just didn't know. It certainly doesn't weigh upon me very heavily. See? So I've watched Sue as she's working with Michael. And I began, as I watched, created some thinking. One of the things that Michael, at the age of 5, has not had in his life is any structure. He's gone to bed when he wanted to, woke up when he wanted to, sleepy when he wanted to, yelled at when he didn't do the right things. No structure. So I very painfully have watched Sue over the last 3 or 4 weeks try to bring structure into his life. So they come home and They both say hi to me, then I'm ignored for 2 hours. And Sue feeds him, gives him his medicine. It's between 6 and 6:15. And here comes the structure. And then at about 8 o'clock, Sue says, "Oh, you still here? Good night." And then she goes to bed with him and reads him a story and talks to him and sings to him. And he goes to sleep. Then she gets him up in the morning and feeds breakfast and goes through that structure. Now, I got a question to ask you, because I only ask fair questions. Is this Sue trying to show her dominance over this 5-year-old? Or is this a gift to this 5-year-old? How's it a gift?
She gives him her time and energy and
love.
Yeah. Okay.
He's important.
Pardon?
He's important. He's showing he's important.
Absolutely. How's this going to benefit him? Because I also hear him, "Wah! Wah! Wah! Why me? No! Wah!" I'm in the room going, to me, not him. Let's clarify that. Though every once in a while I might get mixed up. But how's it a gift to him?
He's never had attention, so he doesn't know what love is either.
Okay. And how do, hopefully, that would this benefit him, not only today, but in the future?
We all need structure. We're all going to run into structure. You just need to know how to deal with it and how to accept it and whatever. So.
Okay. Fair enough. What else input?
Once he goes to school, he'll hopefully be a little structured enough that he can...
Well, absolutely. In school, they give him red and greens. Red means... whatever that means, don't ask. And green means good. Well, 3, 4, 5 weeks ago when he came, he'd get 2 reds a week or 3 reds a week. Now it's almost green every day. And he comes in and he's very proud to tell me, you know, "I got a green today." So he's happy. But how does this benefit him in the long run, or does it?
Every decision, every relationship, every job, everything that he does will be affected by that.
Yes. Yes. And that's what I began to realize as I watched Sue work with him. This is not, well, he's got to be disciplined. This is not a risk and reward. If you do this, you get something good, but if you do this, I'm going to punish you. This is an absolute gift in this boy's life.
Well, it's not just a gift for him, it's a gift for the children that he might have, and then great-great-grandchildren.
Absolutely.
Because yes. He will learn how to treat and love something, opposed to just, you know, shoving them off in the corner and saying, "You're not worth the time."
Absolutely. This is a life-changing experience for this 5-year-old, if it can continue and if it can hold. Okay? Now let's look at some other children called the children of Israel. How many times have you looked at Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, and that other book, and all you saw was a God who said, "You need to be disciplined. And if you do this, this is absolutely the punishment you're going to get. And you better do it my way, or man, what results you're going to get." I would say throughout our spiritual journey in our life that perhaps we've looked at that way many times. Do this, or this is the consequence. So I would like to ask the question this morning is, have you ever looked at the story of the children of Israel in their almost 40 years of wandering through the wilderness at all of the gifts that God gave His children? Or have you looked at them as, man, you talk about somebody being arbitrary, somebody saying, well, this is the way it's got to be. It certainly affects your picture of God. Now, I want to set this principle. What is true of a nation is often true of a church, and certainly is true of an individual. Do you get that picture? We have 15% of the Old Testament, 11% of the Bible on these 40 years, and I think it's a picture of the children of Israel. I think it's a picture of our denomination. It could be a picture of the Arlington Church. It certainly is a picture of our lives. Because I would say we're no different. Now, here comes your choice. We're going to talk about two gifts that God gave the children of Israel. And you get to pick which one you want to discuss first. Now, I'm going to throw out a third one that says for the next 35 minutes, we can all just sit here and meditate. That would probably hurt my feelings. So please pick one or two. I would feel good. Number one gift. God gave to the children the gift of organization, the gift of structure. Number two gift, God gave to the children of Israel and re-emphasized the gift of tithing. So the choice is, do we want to discuss the gift of organization or the gift of tithing, or do you want to meditate?
They kind of go together. The first two go together, don't they?
Could or couldn't? So how many want tithing? Raise your hands high. One, two, three, four, five, six. How many want the organization of support?
Are you holding out for the
Boy. Are you a first-time visitor in this class? Yes.
Meditation was good.
In this class. Man, I had all kinds of gifts for you, and you just blew them.
What we're going to do, we're going to meditate in one of those two areas.
Whoa, okay. Very good. Very good. I like that.
I prefer the first.
You prefer first, okay. How many want meditation? Well, that's good. Organization. Have you ever thought of organization as a gift?
Yes.
Who says yes? Who says no? I'm a rebellious person by nature. So, you know, whenever I see structure, the first thing that goes through my mind is, well, how can I get around it? And so I've never looked at structure as a gift, but the older I get and the more mature I get, I begin to understand that it is absolutely a gift. Now, got a question for you. God comes along with the children of Israel and He finds 70 elders to support Aaron, and then He takes the Levites and the Levites, not the ones that made the blue jeans, the Levites, and He takes them and they're to work with the sanctuary. And then He begins to divide them up into hundreds and different jobs, different duties that they were supposed to do, and everything is well organized. Why did He do this?
Structure.
Pardon?
For structure.
For structure, okay. But is structure good or bad? Yes.
You know, it's interesting, and I would not have thought of this without thinking about Sue and her grandchild, that we know that pathways are created in the brain, and those are very difficult to change. And we also know that, especially the frontal lobe, works much better under the environment of structure and routine, that if the body knows what to expect, when it's going to eat, when it's going to sleep, when it's going to do things, it actually can function much better. Mm-hmm. And you put that together with what Paul said, that be transformed by the renewing of your minds. There's a lot about our minds, and God was taking a people that had created these pathways in their brain that were very deep. as most of us are trying to do in our lives. And he knows that under the environment of structure, we're able to do that better.
Okay.
And so it's an interesting correlation.
Okay.
It's also interesting to note that children know that they are loved when they have boundaries. Now, we don't understand how the brain processes that, but we know that's true.
Okay.
And we know that children will interpret that they are loved when their parents are consistent with those boundaries.
Okay. So you have no problem seeing structure as a gift from God?
Correct.
Okay. We'll go to Paul, then we'll come to Randy.
Also, it looks like that by choosing different, giving out jobs to so many different people, so specifying what they were to do, got him involved in it, personally involved.
Okay.
Which if they were just spectators, it's a lot different than being involved in the okay. process, just like if we're involved in a class or involved in a
okay.
church.
So is involvement important?
Organization a lot okay. of times creates involvement.
Okay. So we have structure, we have involvement. Randy.
Well, we got to also remember that these people came from a situation where they had no say in what would happen. They were slaves, so they were told what to do every day of the week, every day of their life. And so all of a sudden, now they had nobody telling them what to do. They don't know how to function.
Okay.
They don't know how to live, how to set things up. So God had to give them a structure so they...
Okay.
So
are the children of Israel unlike Michael?
No. He doesn't know what structure is. He hasn't had the opportunity to understand it,
Okay.
Someone has to show it to him.
All right.
Like God had to show these people, only they weren't 5 years old, they were adults and, you know,
okay.
had been
very good.
Living.
Yes, ma'am.
The thing is, too, that they're coming from an Egyptian culture. Mm-hmm. That's not what God wanted them to continue with. He wanted them to go back into Israel, the culture for him. I mean, everything surrounding it. Rules were different, and it's kind of like the body of church, the Christ. I mean, we compare that to the your body. Everybody has their own different talents.
Okay.
There's a children's story. Well, would you want your hands to do the same thing that your feet do?
Okay. We're going to come to that in just a second, so hold that thought. Very good. Anything else?
I am thinking...
Yes, Trevor.
I'm thinking in regards to the fact that before they got to this point, God had shown his love for them. Now, if we back up to the incident with Korah and his cohorts, and even when Jethro came and gave instructions, this is where they start having problems, because before they knew what God wanted of them, but now structure has begun to be built into the system, and this is where their minds need to grasp that concept.
Okay. All right. So, is it fair to agree that if you're a loving parent and understand parenting, that structure is good, involvement is good, and sometimes discipline goes along with helping that structure? Do we have any disagreements in that? Okay, so is this an arbitrary, this is the way I want it done by God, or is this a gift?
Yes.
Absolute gift. All right, is there any parallel to this in the New Testament? How are you doing? Any parallel in the New Testament?
Yes.
I hear a yes. Yes.
The New Testament church was set up with a structure that I don't know that we know all the details of it, but we know that there was definitely a structure that was put in place.
Okay.
Where people understood what their responsibilities were.
Okay. So, is that good or bad? I hear. So, what does that mean? Is that good or bad?
We didn't have structure, but we would have chaos.
Okay.
And nobody would be consulting anybody about what was to be done.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I also think it gives us a picture and an understanding that God has order and structure, and that He is a God of order and structure, which means everything has a plan, that our lives have a plan, okay. And that there is an order and a structure and an end to the ill that we're experiencing, that God has a plan that doesn't just, you know, it's not just for this existence, but that takes us beyond.
Okay. All right. And how, yes?
Well, along with that, what she just said is you can look at nature, you can look at the stars, you can look at everything and see order, that God isn't a God of order. And so we're the only, probably the only chaotic bunch of, in the whole system.
Okay. Do you think that there was order in, oh, yes?
Well, you look at the Jesus' time, there was a real order and a structure.
Oh, absolutely.
You look at that structure, and that was a structure without relationships and without meaning. And that's the danger of structure. Because it became, the structure was a God.
Okay. So are you saying that structure can become a God?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have parents who are great structured, but those kids are so out of bounds because there's no relationship.
When they get beyond the structure, they go nuts.
Okay, all right. All right, well, let's bring it down to modern time. Let's talk about us and our church. If it's true about Israel that it needs structure, and it's true about the denomination that needs structure, which I believe it does, and if structure is a gift for our church, then if we were going to set up an idealistic church, what structure would we bring to it? Obviously, I didn't ask the right question. I'm fair to wrong. Trent.
Well, you know, we're talking about children here a little bit, and we're talking about adults. And one of the things that happens, I think, sometimes with adults, is that they are relying on their parents' structure when they're a child, and so then they get out into the world on their own, and they find out that they need to rely on some sort of structure.
Okay.
Well, the structure that we as a church need to rely on as our foundation is God's purpose and will for our
Absolutely.
Lives.
Absolutely.
We need to be tuned in to that.
Okay. I appreciate that, and that's a true statement. I asked the question, but it wasn't very clear, so I'll back up and go at it a different way. Did God bring order, instruction, and details into the children of Israel? Of what group was to do this and this and this and this. Did he do that?
Yes.
Yes. In the New Testament church, did he come along through Paul and others and define spiritual gifts? Did he say that some should be teachers, some should be preachers, and some should be doing this, and this is what you were saying, we all can't be arms, hands, and legs. So, if we were to define a church group to do certain things, let's all go back for us who've been Adventist or Baptist or Methodist for a long time ago. How many of you at one time thought that your duty as a church member was to go out and give Bible studies to people? That was your obligation?
I've been told that, but I never thought
that. Well, then let's rephrase it. How many of you were taught, led to, guilt trip put on to go out and either give Bible studies or do witnessing to people? Raise your hands. Okay. Now, that's a lot of us. Do we remember when we used to have the missionary volunteer report every week, and we'd have questions like, how many Bible studies given this week?
Oh, yes.
Yep. Am I right?
Yeah.
All right. How many people helped? How many dollars given? And we took great pride in calculating all of this. And at the end of the year, when we go out and do in-gathering, then we had all this statistical things that we've given 550 305,415 Bible studies and did all of these things. Now, as a youngster growing up, what do you think my motivation was to find somebody to help?
So you could raise your hand.
So I could raise my hand. So my first question was, well, what's the definition of helping? And I was hoping it was help somebody across the street, you see. So, now, how many of y'all felt guilty that you couldn't give Bible studies? Or that you didn't give Bible studies?
I gave Bible studies.
You gave Bible studies. Good ones?
Good ones.
Okay. Okay. Well, I would say among these nice people, there's people in here that give horrific Bible studies.
They're different gifts.
Pardon?
They're different gifts. Somebody may have that gift.
Absolutely. So, why would we want to put, in this organization, would we want to put gifts upon people who have no gift? I've said 100 million times, I do not have the gift of compassion, and I do not have the gift of intercessory prayer. So, why would I want to sign up for prayer and fasting when God has not given me either one of those gifts? See? And I don't feel guilty about any of it. Now, if we were to start a program that was to benefit our imaginary church, I want to picture you to picture yourself as a visitor, and you're walking up to our imaginary church. What do you think would be important for us to identify the correct people to be in the correct positions that would matter to this visitor that's walking up to our imaginary church? Would it be the Bible study people?
It depends.
I say it doesn't depend.
It depends.
That's why we have fun in this class. We have lots of things we can share. What do you think would be the best?
The friendly people that have to see him coming.
Pardon?
The friendly, welcoming, loving people.
Is that a gift?
It is a gift. Yes.
Don't have that gift either. See?
You're really limited.
Now you're catching on. Nothing wrong with understanding your limitations. I'm telling you, there is nothing wrong with that. That is, in fact, that's one of the things of being brilliant is understanding your limitations. See, yeah, you see, I would think that if we had this idealistic church, and here comes a visitor out of nowhere, that the greatest thing we could do was find people who had the gift and who understood the gift and who longed to use that gift of hospitality or friendliness. Because what's the first impression that happens? Pardon?
The church is cold.
When you walk in that door, I teach my salespeople when they do door knocking, they have 10 seconds. 10 seconds, and that impression is made at that door. It's what you say, what you do, and what you act in 10 seconds. That's exactly correct. 10 seconds. See? So, instead of going out in this structure that God has a gift for every church, instead of going out and saying, well, we ought to be witnessing, or we ought to be out passing literature, or we ought to be out passing, giving out Bible studies, well, God didn't do that to the children of Israel. He didn't say, here's my sanctuary, this is where I dwell among you, this is where I want to meet with you, right in the midst of the camp. And on May, I want these people to move it when we move, and then I want this tribe, and I want this tribe. No. He found a group of people who had been loyal and said, obviously, This is what I want you to do, and I want you to perfect, and I want you to pray. And this became, in the structure, their gift for that group of people. Make sense? Yes?
There were two things that he told them that they never did. One of them that they had problems with was the strangers among them,
mm-hmm.
how they were supposed to treat them. And the other was that they were to be a light to the world.
Try.
And they became self-centered.
And by the way, I appreciate that. Let's talk about the light of the world. In most denominations, how does most denominations consider evangelism to be done? Pardon?
Missionaries. Bring people into your church.
Okay.
Well, they send missionaries out too.
Okay.
They support their own missionaries.
Yeah. Okay. They go out and find. What was God's original intent with His children of Israel?
People would find them.
People would find them. Do you see the difference? He set them in the most fertile land, crossroads of the world, and as people began to travel, they would come across Israel, and they would see happy people, kind people, caring people, an orderly group, and they would stop and say, "My, you have something I don't have. Would you mind sharing that with me?" And then they would be able to sit down excuse me, and say, "Let me tell you a story about a person called Yahweh. We were in slavery in Egypt, and He brought us out, and this is what we're like." Most powerful witness that can be made theologically is, "This was what I was like. This is when I met Jesus, and this is what He's done in my life." If we do not have that testimony, we have no witness. And so God's plan all along was that these people were to be a light on a hill, and the world would be attracted to them, and they would say, "Let me tell you about our God." Is there a lesson to be learned from that in our life? And do I dare say, in our church? Yes.
You know, Ernie, I think the children of Israel took the blessings and made it mean that they felt like they were then above and better than. And I think that's the challenge any organization or structure has, is to take the blessings that they receive and to realize that it's the blessings are only really blessings if you give them.
Absolutely.
And so when you keep them and hold them and take them and make it mean something about me,
God is pouring blessings through us, and unless we let it come out to others, He fills us up and has nowhere to go. Yes?
I experienced that very thing this week. As some know, we have a number of international students at Burton. And so we've put them into a special Bible class because most of them are juniors, and Daniel and Revelation isn't the best place to introduce a Buddhist to Christianity. And Rick Murray teaches that class for us. And so I told Rick at the beginning of the year, I said, "Go out, get some Vietnamese English Bibles." And these kids have come back so many times saying, "Thank you for the Bible." And yesterday happened to be Teacher's Day in Vietnam. And so these kids put together some cards. They gave one to Rick, they gave one to me, again, thanking me about the Bibles. But what they said in Rick's card was very impressive. Basically, they said, "When we came here, we didn't know anything about Jesus. and since we've been in your class, we want to know more about
absolutely.
Jesus.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what yeah.
he is. Absolutely. Yes.
I was also thinking, you know, in most of other religions and other understandings of, they live for how to improve life here. And I think the message that God was trying to is trying to teach us, and as he was trying to teach the children of Israel, is that life transcends from here and reconnects us back to heaven. And that is the pathway or the journey that we're, it's not just here.
Yes.
It's not just a better life or a more structured life. It is now we're reconnected back to our home. That is our place.
Yes.
And if we stay here, we're stagnant.
Yeah. And by understanding that, it does improve the quality of life here. That's the good thing. Okay, now I want you all to pretend. I'm a great pretender. We're the children of Israel. We're a light on the city of the hill, and here comes somebody traveling, and they come along, and they say, oh my, what a nice looking bunch of people. What do you have that we don't have? Now, should we say, well, we eat the right meat? Should we?
What did all of them
mean? Pardon?
What did the all of them mean?
We're vegetarians, most of us. You see, if we're not careful, we have proof in the scriptures of what happened to them. We have proof of what happened in the scriptures. Because the Jews became a light on a hill. And when a Samaritan came by, what did they say to the Samaritan?
Well, they shut the light
out. Yeah. Get away! When a Gentile came along, what did they say? Get away! When the Creator of the universe came down and walked among them, what did they say?
Get away!
Get away! God has given each of us gifts. Within this room, do you understand that we have as big a group in this room today as lots of churches have throughout the Southwestern Union Conference on any given Sabbath? By the way, Your teaching staff, Roger and myself and Rob, do not take that lightly. We understand and appreciate it. But within this room, there are enough spiritual gifts that we could put together in this room a team that could work cohesively. Is that cohesively? Three-word syllable words are tough. And manifest the love of God throughout our gifts. We have those gifts in here. There are some that have absolute gift of hospitality. And Sandra's one of them. There are people that have the gift of teaching. Rob's one of them. Yeah, see? There are people that have the gift of giving. There are some people, when they write out their gifts to the church, their tithe and their gifts to the church, that ministry is just as important as the minister, what he says, Kevin says, at the 11 o'clock hour. And there are people that have the gift of caring. See, that's the structure that God gave to the children of Israel. Everybody involved, everybody had something to do. And that's the structure that made the New Testament church, and that's the structure that should help make our church. Is that we have involvement, not all giving Bible studies. Not everybody is called to give Bible studies. But everybody doing a part for the body of Christ, and when people see the Arlington Church become a light on the hill, then they'll become and say, what do you have? And that's our challenge. Any comments? Yes.
My personally, I have found that with some of the gifts that I have, I thought that was just average. And I found that, you know, if, unless you put yourself out there, you don't realize how gifted you are in certain areas. So, I mean, sometimes you have to explore to find out your gifts.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, God just doesn't come along, tap you on the shoulder, and say, here's your gift. Any other comments? If not, we're moving to part two, tithing.
So I
yes.
am very happy that I came to class this morning. I think it's very providential because I have been struggling with this issue. I know my gifts, but it's like the church expects you to do certain things. And like one of my gifts is building up inside the church. I want to see the members grow, become deep-rooted. Going outside and witnessing does not appeal to me.
No.
I mean, I don't mind talking to people about Christ, but this Bible study and knocking on doors stuff just does not appeal to me.
No.
And I feel guilty, but we're supposed to be out there doing this and that, you know. So I appreciate the reassurance that we need to do what we do best
yes.
instead of trying to do yes. everything else.
But you also witness to people and
yes.
through your life.
Yes.
So, I mean, you don't necessarily have to.
We're all witnessing, but we're all not the same part of the body. And believe me, there's times when people say, what do Seventh-day Adventists believe? You'd be better off saying nothing than what's being said. You see, that's what I'm saying. Not all is called. God has each part of the body, and He has gifts that's going to fill that body. Let me give you a quick example. In recruiting, I recruit salesmen who go door to door, and then I also recruit telemarketers who work on the phone. Now, a long time ago, somebody from corporate, you know, these corporate people know everything except they know nothing, and they came along and said that when you recruit salespeople, that we want to spend for them to spend 3 days doing telemarketing. And I said, nicely, I don't think it was very nice, you must be crazy, that's not going to work. Well, yes it will, and do it. So what I found was exactly what I knew, that when you told an outdoor, eye-to-eye, belly-to-belly salesman that to come in and work 3 hours on the phone, some quit, some refused, some called in sick, some grandfathers died 5 times. You see? Why? Because if you're a person-to-person salesman, you don't have the gift of sitting there calling on the phone and getting told off and hung up on. If you're a telemarketer, you don't have the gift of going out and door knocking. Well, it's the same thing in the spiritual gifts. Not all of us have the same talents, but when we find where our talent can be used in the body of Christ, then we feel just as important as the minister. See? And the greeters at the door are such a viable part. And generally most churches, not ours, we're a little bit better than most, but most churches say, oh, you ain't got anything to do, go stand at the door and hand out bulletins. If you don't believe me, go to these churches. Yes?
I want to make a personal comment. You took the words right out of my mouth. I started attending about 6 months ago. And Jim is my favorite greeter, as I always refer to him.
Absolutely.
And do you know why? Because when I first started attending, he shook my hand, looked me in the eye, and wanted to get my name. And the next week when I came in, he said, hey, Skip, how are you?
That's right.
It meant a lot to me.
You bet.
Thank you, by the way.
You bet. See? He has that gift. He takes all these little nice people out to the car and puts them in the car and he meets them when it rains. And I won't mention it, most are ladies, but see? That's a gift. When it rains, I have Sue drop me off at the front door. It's a gift. So I would like for us as a class and perhaps as a church to begin thinking along those lines, because everybody in this class has a gift that if the church has a program, that we have an opportunity to take that gift and glorify God. And it's all gifts are just as important. There is no such thing, I know it's not good language, no such thing as a lesser gift. It's all the same. Let's talk about tithing. Have you ever thought of tithing as a gift?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, I was twisting my arms at first.
Oh, okay.
It's a recognition that I have what I need and I can help others.
Absolutely. There's been a study, I don't have the statistics, because I didn't take a long enough bubble bath to come up with it. But there are statistics that say that people that win the lottery end up as some of the most miserable people in the world. They end up broke,
divorced,
family hates them, they hate, see, and everything. Now, slaves, was tithing first given to the children of Israel in the wilderness? No. Tithing has been all along. See, but when they were in the wilderness and they're getting ready to go over into the promised land, what would be the tendency that would happen if each one of us got $1 million this morning?
I would be in the Caribbean in the beach.
Pardon?
I would be in the Caribbean in the beach.
See, there would be a tendency to, wow, I finally made it. And God knew that about His children. And so He gave them one of the most precious gifts that He can give to the children of Israel, to the church, and to us, is the privilege of when we make something, we always keep in mind, God, thank you for what you've done for me. It does not matter where that tithe money goes, how's it spent, what it does, is it biblically spent or not, doesn't make any difference to us as individuals, because it's that relationship of thank you, God. So you talk about a gift, and I'm just like Jim. One of the questions I used to ponder when I was in my early 20s, and I'm not sure I came up with the right conclusion, was if a person paid their tithe and said, God, I hate paying this, I can't stand paying it, but I'm going to pay it, and you better bless me. Would God bless him?
Nope. It's a burden, not a blessing. Read Malachi's page.
God loveth a cheerful giver.
Pardon?
It says God loveth a cheerful giver. That word cheerful, we get the word hilarious from.
But see, sometimes I used to think maybe He would, just simply because it's a starting place. Now I broadened that thinking and said, whatever God has to do to get to a starting place in our lives, He'll get there. So, gifts, yes. I've learned a lot in the last 3 weeks. A different perspective of watching a great-grandmother give. And I admire for it. And then I begin to understand what God has done for His great, 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 great grandsons and daughters. Because we're no different. Father in heaven, as always, thank you for your love and your guidance. Thank you that you care enough to say, my children, you've messed up, done things wrong, but because I care and I love, I'm going to bring just a little structure. And hopefully as we grow together, the structure means nothing. It's the lessons that you learn that brings our relationship closer and closer that mean everything. Help us to remember that you are the giver of life, the giver of good things, and you're the lover of our souls. In Jesus' name, amen.